4 years, with this focus being on the influence of propagation daily light integral and root zone temperature on rooting of single internode Pennisetum culm cuttings. So when to get started, I want to talk about the ornamental grass industry that in 2015, it was reported to be $158 million. And that's a 27% increase from 2009 to 2014. This is the total sales of all annuals and perennials. But of all of those that are produced, one has become increasingly popular, and that is purple fountain grass, not only grown as a specimen, but also to be utilized in mixed combo containers, as you can see pictured here at the bottom of the screen. However, growers often are challenged with producing purple fountain grass, and that occurs within the propagation phase, or what they utilize to produce these finished products, with the recommended method of propagating purple fountain grass being crown divisions. And growers have stated that they are costly, but they are fast to produce. Whereas an alternative method to produce purple fountain grass is from tissue cultured propagules. They're more cost effective, but time consuming because they're much smaller. So when we look at the value of a individual liner in a 72 cell tray in 2018, week two, the crown divisions on average are ranged between 69 and 85 cent per plant, but a tissue cultured propagule range between 52 cent and 85 cent. And these prices are based on the quality of the liners that they receive. So some of the cheaper liners will be of lower quality. So here's an example of the tissue cultured propagules on the left, and you can see that they're much smaller, therefore it's going to take longer to produce a marketable liner, whereas crown divisions on the right are much larger, and it doesn't take that long to fill out a final container. So when we go back to this grower challenge, is that it takes during the winter up to 12 weeks, so 3 months, just to produce a marketable liner of purple fountain grass, and then during the spring, it takes up to 2 months. So this is likely because of the method in which it's propagated, but also light and temperature, which are two exogenous factors that influences rhizogenesis among cuttings, among other factors within exogenous factors and endogenous as well. So when we talk about light with greenhouse growers, we talk about the photosynthetic daily light integral. And this is the amount of light that plants receive in 24 hours. And it changes over the course of the day, week, month, and essentially the propagation season. So when there's low daily light integral in the propagation, what do? We provide supplemental lighting. And this helps increase the DLI by providing more light and also extending the photo period. So that's how we get the increased daily light integral. So here's an example of a propagation station in Germany that is using supplemental lighting, but also to extend the photo period to get their increased daily light integral. So this figure demonstrates the average outdoor daily light integral during January through March, when a lot of annual bedding plants and perennials are being propagated. You can see that the outdoor daily light integral is very low, but it's even further reduced by up to 50% in the greenhouse from the greenhouse glazing material, the infrastructure, and even hanging baskets that can be hung above the propagation area. So there is quite a bit of benefit during January, February, and even a moderate benefit in March in Michigan when using supplemental lighting for young plant production. Now, switching gears a little bit and talking about temperature is that it does influence many physiological processes, but what we're considering for propagation is important for root and shoot development. So when we look at the rate of plant development, because temperature is dependent, or plant development is dependent on temperature, so if we increase the temperature, the rate of plant development increases linearly up to the optimal temperature. Once we get above this optimal temperature, plant development starts to decrease down to the maximum temperature, and it then ceases and becomes detrimental. Specifically for root zone temperature, it is critical for root initiation, and it has been reported that if you increase the root zone temperature, it hastens the time to visible root formation and increases the number of roots per cutting. However, when you don't provide enough root zone temperature or a suboptimal root zone temperature, it can limit or inhibit adventitious root formation. So So what do growers, or how do growers provide root zone temperature? Well, they can provide that temperature across the bench with these heating cables, heating mats or in-ground heating, or even fins that are hung below the benches and have that heat to rise up to heat that root zone temperature. So for us, we wanted to look at purple fountain grass to solve this grower challenge, but also to look at the impact of propagation daily light integral, or PDLI, or root zone temperature on rhizogenesis and culm development of single internode culm cuttings. By doing so, we had to produce our own stock plant. So we received commercially available 50-cell liner trays, grew those, or liners, transplanted them, and grew these plants out for a year to produce our stock plants. When we were ready to harvest, we would go in and cut back all the culms, and then we would excise 1 centimeter above and below each node on a single culm to produce all of these individual culm cuttings. So we did some preliminary studies and found that node position did not influence rooting ability of the single internode culm cutting. We also looked at, do we need to reduce the leaf surface area by cutting the leaf blades? We found that if you do, the cuttings will dry out within propagation, so we recommend not cutting the leaf blades. And we also found that a rooting hormone is needed. For all our studies, we use node positions 2 through 4 because node position 1, most proximal to the crown, likely had preformed root nodules. So we discarded those, and we didn't use node position 5 because of inflorescence. Like I said, that we, from our preliminary study, we applied a rooting hormone, a 3-second basal dip, and a combination of IBA and NAA. The cuttings were then stuck into a propagation tray filled with a solace-based substrate with 50% coarse perlite amended to it. Trays were then placed in a propagation greenhouse with air temperature of 23 degrees Celsius and relative humidity of 80% under 4 different daily light integrals. So for experiment 1, we propagated under a daily light integral of 4 or 10 moles per meter square per day, and experiment 2, 8 or 16. So here's an example of our experimental setup. In addition to the daily light integrals, we had 4 root zone temperatures of 21, 23, 25, or 27 degrees Celsius. Here's an example of the root zone heating across our benches. However, for this experiment, we did insulate the benches, then put the root zone heating down, metal across the benches to get uniform heating, and then covered it with plastic. So this is an older photo. So this is just an example of the propagation environmental data for experiment 1 with the PDLI 4 and 10. Is that you can see that we did achieve our PDLIs, maintained our substrate temperatures, and we reported canopy temperature within those little propagation areas as well. So after 28 days, we assessed culm density, or the number of culms, the number of roots produced per cutting, culm dry mass, root dry mass, among other parameters. But for today's presentation, I'm only going to talk about culm density and root dry mass. So this is experiment 1, so PDLI of 4 and 10. And the lowercase letters are mean separations within column, and the uppercase letters are mean separations among the root zone temperatures. So when we look at a PDLI of 4, as we increased root zone temperature from 21 to 27, we saw an increased number of culms. Now when we look at a PDLI of 10, we found that we increase the number of culms only up to the minimum temperature of 23 degrees. So if we go above that, they were statistically similar. But when we compare the root zone, the propagation daily light integrals, we found that from 4 to 10, we had an increased number of culms at 21 and 23 degrees. For root dry mass, we found that as you increase, or the optimum temperature at a PDLI of 4 to be 23. However, if you increase root zone temperature at a PDLI of 10, we had the greatest root dry mass to occur at 25 and 27. However, I do want to point out that when we compare the two PDLIs at a root zone 23, they were statistically similar. But when you look at the photos, fruit dry mass, which is much smaller at 23 at a PDLI of 4 than a PDLI of 10. Now moving on to experiment 2, again with a PDLI of 8 and a PDLI of 16, we found that at a roots on temperature of 23 produce the most number of culms as we decreased PDLI from 16 to 8. However, an inverse trend occurred as we increased roots on temperature to 27, with the most number of culms occurring at a PDLI of 16. And we believe this is because of increased solar radiation along with the supplemental lighting. However, our environmental data is still consistent that we maintained a root zone temperature 27 and a PDLI of 16, but the air temperature did not fluctuate either. So we're still trying to myth of what's going on here. And then finally, with the root dry mass, we found, again, a similar response that a PDLI of 8 at a root zone temperature of 23 was the optimal temperature. So in conclusion, is what we found when all this data is taken together, that the root zone temperature should be maintained between 23 and 25 with a target daily light integral, propagation daily light integral of 8 to 10. Furthermore, not only now can growers produce purple fountain grass from tissue culture or crown divisions, but we're providing more supplemental information to that that's already been out there, that purple fountain grass can be produced from single node comb cuttings. But here's an example of what they look like at 28 days for more quick crop production. So with that, I'd like to thank all the foundations, organizations, and the private horticultural companies to make this research possible. So the question was, what type of propagation was used for other ornamental grasses? That could be seed propagation, crown divisions, tissue cultured, or I believe it's called Proximus. I'm not too familiar with it as well. And the reason why we don't do seed propagation with Pennisetum is because purple fountain grass, their seeds are sterile.